Today on Tim and Sid, are Flames fans starting to panic?
Are Leaf fans starting to panic?
And has Colin Kaepernick started his NFL comeback?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. But boy, a lot of stuff happened over the weekend.
Oh my goodness. Do you want to talk about it on the show that's called Tim and Sid?
Let's go.
It's named for us.
Let's go.
Hashtag Tim and Sid. Of course, I go by the name of the kid. Famous. Wow. This here is the Tim and Sid show. You are now tuned in, coast to coast, entertaining the masses. Sports entertainment. Yeah. It's about to get started. Sit back, enjoy the show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
It is Monday, November 18th. What is going on? I'm Sid Sixero. He's Tim McAuliffe. I had a little bit too much to drink over the weekend. This is Tim and Sid.
Did you really?
Yeah, a little bit.
What did you do?
Beer. What do you mean, what did I do? It's a personal question.
No, but were you just sitting in your basement drinking, or did
no,
you go
I was out?
And
I was
do
out.
That?
We had a family.
Hey, were you
we had a family thing, and I got up the next
you
morning.
You at the clubs? Were you in the clubs with 50 Cent?
No, I wasn't at the clubs.
Bum, bum.
No, I wasn't at Fluid.
That's
what I think a club is now. This is Tim and Sid live on Sportsnet and live on Sportsnet 590, the Fan in the Toronto area.
I don't know what they are anyway either.
Are you in that stage?
Yeah.
Because I'm in that stage where, hey, did you go to the club? I'm like, I haven't been to 107 in years in Mississauga. No show in this country interacts with viewers and listeners the way this one does. That is not hyperbole. That's facts, kids. At Tim and Sid on Twitter is how you can do that. Our Instagram and Facebook accounts are also things.
If you like to stream the show, you can do that on Sportsnet now. If you don't know what streaming is, it's just watching us. Download the Sportsnet app for more information on how you can watch us in many different ways, shapes, and forms. Coming up over the next 2 hours of what we hope is edutainment, we will discuss. Do we have to do the first one?
We got to get it out of the way. Go. Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I don't know if I want to do this.
I don't want to do it either. Read it.
It's heartbreaking.
It is. Please read it.
Canada Soccer.
What else is new?
Leafs.
What else is new?
Habs.
New injury problems.
Oh, that's a tough break. Mm. Raptors.
Back at home.
NFL.
Week 11.
Listen, we are not going to have enough time for everything, including where and what you drank over the weekend. And I think people are going to vote for us to hit the panic button on the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I think we're going to have a conversation about what the hell that was for Colin Kaepernick over the weekend with Robert Klemko, formerly of SI. Been told the first day with the Washington Post is today. And he is joining us a little later on. Kelly Rudy will join us and Eric Smith on the Raptors and the Hornets tonight. So instead of how was your weekend and how much did you have to drink at a family function over the weekend, can I just say, because we have so much bleep going on, what was the most important football score of the weekend? This is the thing where we call it the warm-up, or at least someone else called it the warm-up, and you and I are stuck with the warm-up. We usually get warmed up during the warm-up.
Yeah.
But we don't have time to get warmed up. Can I get right into football talk?
So you're saying I have no time for the sports foreplay, and we got to attack
I just said something about warming up.
So
I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
No, I don't know what you're talking about either.
And you wanted me to head on? Is that what you said to me?
I'm tired. It's been a long weekend. So you want to get right into most important football score of the weekend? That's where you want to start?
I could do that. The NFC and AFC East, really interesting to me. Sorry, the NFC East, the Cowboys and the Eagles.
Yep.
The AFC South,
yep.
The Texans and the Colts. Really interesting to me.
Yeah, words are great.
That's what I wanted
words
to get to.
Words are amazing.
But do we disseminate what the Patriots did and didn't do at 9-1? Is that where we start this? Or is a better question, is Lamar Jackson the MVP and the Ravens are better than the Patriots as of right now?
I think Lamar Jackson's the MVP. So that's not even an interesting discussion to me anymore.
Well, that
I think it's done.
Subject to change. No?
No, things in the NFL usually stay the same.
I understand.
Right? This is the NFL.
Okay, I want to add the subject to change on my behalf because I have been touting Lamar Jackson for MVP for a great deal of the year.
Yeah.
And I feel somewhat vindicated at this point in time, but I do also believe that Russell Wilson is very much in the hunt.
Listen, Tim, you're looking at two guys and you're listening to two guys who have loved them some Lamar Jackson. I had the Ravens in the AFC title game to start the year. Like, we love us some Lamar Jackson. This is done, barring an injury. He is going to win the MVP. It's done.
Wow.
This is done.
Okay.
So who's going to take it away from him? Just give me one name.
Russell Wilson, I said.
Russell Wilson. No, wrong. Okay. It's not going to be Russell Wilson.
Okay.
He's having a great year, but you have to be from another planet to be doing what Lamar Jackson is doing.
Okay.
And quite frankly, Russell Wilson's not having that kind of a year. Lamar Jackson is.
Yes, he is.
No, he isn't.
Yes, he is.
Come on.
Okay.
They're going to lose in the first round. You know that, and I know that.
Okay, but are the Baltimore Ravens going to win in the first round?
Here's the thing. Patriots are still going to the Super Bowl.
So
Patriots are still doing this.
By the way, Russell Wilson has thrown for 2,700 yards on 69%. You know what I'm talking about. Completion percentage, 23 touchdowns, 2 interceptions.
Oh, you know what I mean, baby?
And they're 8-2.
Yeah. He's had a fantastic year.
By the way, did Lamar Jackson's? That his middle name is Carrington?
Who?
Russell Carrington Wilson.
Really?
Yeah, that's what it says on Pro Football Reference.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I didn't know that. Learning new things all the time.
Okay, I'm more interested, instead of arguing over whether or not Lamar Jackson is going to win it in week 11 without any doubt, move on to the Ravens are the best team in the AFC right now. However, you would never bet against the Patriots in the postseason because that's the kind of pedigree that they have. But having watched what you watched over the weekend, there are some question marks surrounding the New England Patriots.
There have been question marks offensively all year. Like, they don't have that guy outside. Josh Gordon was supposed to be that guy. Antonio Brown, for a minute, was supposed to be that guy. They haven't filled in for Gronk. They do have issues. Tom Brady threw 44 times yesterday, didn't throw a touchdown pass.
I think he threw 47 times.
Sorry, 47 times.
For 216 yards.
Didn't throw a touchdown pass.
First game in Tom Brady's career that another Patriot led the team in touchdown passes when Brady has played the entire game because Julian Edelman threw the game-winning score to Philip Dorsett.
Like, Tom Brady was done at that post-game podium. Like, Brady is usually the chaser to your Belichick press conference.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Belichick comes out, talks to everyone like they're nothing, literally, leaves. Brady comes out and makes you feel good about yourself again because he talks to you like a human being. Yesterday, it was like the other way around. Tom Brady wanted no part of that media yesterday. He was tired. He was pissed off at 9-1. This is 9-1 Tom Brady.
9-1 Tom Brady.
Annoyed beyond belief that the offense looks the way it does.
How about 47 attempts for 216 yards, Tom Brady, in a Canada Goose camouflage jacket, might
I
add.
That's good. I forgot about that, Timmy.
He was looking sharp.
There is an element of this, though,
and
that
tired.
I think they can fix.
And kind of old. And I'm sure that the defense is probably pretty good, but how good are they? Here's a problem. I really want to say the Patriots aren't the best team in the AFC by a distinct margin, but the road is littered with folks who have bet against Brady and Belichick, and I just can't bring myself to do it.
And I'm not going to get fooled again. As much as I love Baltimore,
you're
I love the story.
Are you telling me you won't be fooled again?
I'm not going to be Pete Townsend up here. I'm not.
Okay.
Tom, they're 9-1. Like, think about the talk in New England.
They're
today.
In the worst division in football repeatedly.
And that's mattered what over the last 15 years?
Can I read you a stat
about
that last 15 years? Make it 19.
Longer than that.
Patriots have won more games than they've lost in 19 consecutive seasons. They've had a winning record. They just, with 9-1, they clinched the winning record. They've done it 19 straight years. No one else has more than 7 in the National Football League. And guess who that is? Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks.
Like, if you're the Patriots, how do you not think you're better than everyone else?
Well, they are, so it's okay.
But even like spiritually, like inside, as a human being, just as a professional, like, you laugh at Miami. You laugh at Buffalo. Bills aren't 7-3. That's not a real 7-3. We all know this.
Right.
Frank Gore's 50. That's not a real 7-3. Like, how do the Patriots not feel that they are still the best team in football every time they get out of bed in the morning? I don't care what they look like. I don't care how many touchdown passes Tom Brady threw. That team is still going to Miami for the Super Bowl February 3rd. There's nothing anybody can do about it.
I don't think
nothing.
I don't think they are.
So who's going?
I don't know. I'm just going to take I'm going to take the field. Want to bet? I'll take the field against the Patriots. I'll do it. They're 9-1.
Okay. And I've been on the other side of these take the field bets. You know my philosophy on take the field bets.
You always take the field?
You're an idiot not to take the field. Mm-hmm. I will be the idiot the other way.
Well, what
I will give you the field.
I just read you that they're 19th consecutive winning season, and you were pronouncing them to the Super Bowl. So if you're going to pronounce them to the Super Bowl, I'll say I don't know. They're probably the favorite. They are the favorite.
I think they're the favorite.
Guaranteed, yeah. They're the favorite. I don't need to look at Vegas.
You know where the public's going on this. Okay, give me the 9-1 team to win the Super Bowl this year.
No. I'm not even telling you to win the Super Bowl. I'm saying just go. Out of the AFC.
Oh, even better.
I'll take the AFC. Done. Actually, you know, look at how quickly I give him that side of the bet.
It was like when someone tried to pay out online and it was a good number.
Rapid fire. Who wins the NFC East?
I mean,
do you want me to read you the schedules left?
Is it not Dallas?
Philly versus Seattle at Miami versus New York Giants at Washington versus Dallas in week 16 at New York Giants. So they get the Giants twice. Dallas at the Patriots next week versus Buffalo at Chicago versus the Rams at Philly week 16. That's the big one versus Washington to close it out.
I like Carson Wentz. I really do. I don't like him that much.
This is rapid fire. Move it along.
Give me Dak Prescott in Dallas.
All right.
And then they'll lose in the first round of the playoffs.
AFC South now tied. Texans, Colts. They face each other Thursday night, so we can talk about this a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Who wins the AFC South?
Who wins the AFC South? Because I dumped all over the Colts after losing Andrew Luck the way I did. Obviously, Jacoby Brissett and the Indianapolis Colts.
Tennessee can win.
No, they can't.
Okay, all right.
And they lost Marlon Mack to broken hand. I don't know how long he's going to be out. All right. Still give me the Colts.
By the way, your Grey Cup pick, Hamilton Tiger Cats.
You're welcome, Hamilton.
Looked very good.
You're
beating
welcome.
The Edmonton Eskimos in the biggest game in Hamilton in about 20 years, and you could feel it. They get the 36-16 win over Edmonton, while the Bombers beat the Riders 20-13 as Cody Fajardo and the Rough Riders could not finish in the red zone a couple times late in that game.
Multiple times. A Tim Hortons field record over 25,100.
Yeah.
There for the East Division final yesterday. Looked like a good atmosphere, Tim.
I was there, yeah. It was a good atmosphere, yeah, without a doubt. It was loud. You could hear the stadium from miles away. It was unbelievable. It felt like the whole city congregated at Tim Hortons field. It was, you could feel it in the air. It was a little different. Listen, they've gone to the Grey Cup a couple times in the last decade, the Hamilton Tiger Cats, but it came out of nowhere. This 15-3 season, this might be the best Hamilton Tiger Cat team that they have ever fielded, and I know that 99 team pretty well. So they're good, but you have the two most tortured fan bases. Since the Riders won, these are the two most tortured fan bases and the two longest droughts in the CFL in the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the Hamilton Tigers.
When are people going to put a couple guys on Brandon Banks?
Oh, my goodness.
Like, I'm not saying that would even work, but I'm just saying throw a couple guys on Banks.
The touchdown pass was ridiculous. Vanier Cup, Calgary, and Montreal, congratulations to both of them on making it to the Vanier Cup.
And quickly, Tim, I know a lot of fan bases are hurting this time of year when your football team's done. Green Rider Nation, they're hurting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they care. That is a fan base in this country that is unique and special to their sport, to their league. That was excruciating to watch. I had no skin in the game.
Mm-hmm.
That was excruciating to watch to have that happen at Mosaic.
Yeah.
With that fan base.
Yeah.
Just Rider Nation,
we feel you.
I'm with you.
Yeah, we feel you.
I'm with you. That was a hell of a way to lose.
Do you want to give them a hug?
No,
I don't know.
They don't deserve that.
I don't know if Saskatchewan
wants to hug. I'll be doing that to
Habs
fans here in a second.
All
right. Leaf fans. We'll pick a fan base. Don't look at me that way, Vinny.
Oh, my goodness.
Don't look at me that way. I can give hugs to a lot of people today.
So the Montreal Canadiens continue to look real good. Unfortunately, they just lost two massive pieces to the pie on two different surgeries. One today, apparently one tomorrow. We'll tell you about those. Is it time to push the panic button in Toronto and in Calgary? All these answers next on this edition of Tim and Sid as we head on to the lead.
Could we press the panic button multiple times today? Is that what you're suggesting?
Oh, my goodness. I never even thought about
it. We've never done that. Ever.
Multiple panic buttons. Television. By the way, big Davis Cup day on the Sportsnet television network.
I was in on Sportsnet 1. I was watching Falzi and everybody. Yeah, doing a pretty good job.
Canada taking out two top 10s in Italy. And looks like they're in good position facing the United States tomorrow. So check that out. We are also locally in Toronto and the Southern Ontario area on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Time now for the lead. and what we call the megaphone, brought to you by Rogers Ignite TV. Now you're in command. You've been voting all day long, sportsnet.ca/vote, or at least we hope you have. We gave you three options, as we do each and every day. Option number one, NFL Sunday recap. Option number two, the Leafs slide. Option number three, CFL playoffs. Right now, the Leafs slide, shockingly, 60% of the vote. And I say shockingly, very sarcastically.
There was only one thing that was going to win that vote today.
You know it. So let's get to it. Okay?
Why'd you say it?
I don't know. I just wanted to get to it.
Why'd you bring a little Woodbridge into it? Why'd you do that?
I didn't do that. I didn't bring a little Woodbridge into it because you were doing Goodfellas in the commercial break.
We're talking about Goodfellas. One of the cameramen, Vinny, I said he was content to be a jerk. And then I brought up the scene from Goodfellas where Joe Pesci's at his mom's place and she tells the joke and whatnot and then lifts the painting. And that's where it started.
But Vinny was saying he was saying he was content. And then you added the content to be a jerk.
Yes.
Right? And now he's no longer content. Look.
And now he's uncontent.
He's got kind of a grimace. Look, yeah.
Shake your fist harder, Vinny. Shake your fist harder.
In case you hadn't heard.
Congratulations, Guy Carboneau.
The Toronto Maple Leafs had a pretty tough weekend as they lost back-to-back games to the Bruins and the Penguins. Combined score 10-3, kids. Leafs have now lost five in a row and have just two regulation wins in their last 15 games. So, Sid, the question is simple. Mm-hmm. Is it time, as many did on Saturday night, for Toronto Maple Leaf fans to hit the panic button?
You're asking me if it is time to hit the button that you and I both have on our soundboards in the studio. This panic button has been circa 2012, 2013 in circulation. This button signifies panic. Mm-hmm. This button signifies a fan base that does not trust what they're seeing. This button signifies negative things. If you want some positivity, if you want an angle of hope, if you want an angle of niceness, that is not the button you hit, Jack.
Would you shut up and tell me what you should
What's the question
do?
Again?
Should we hit the panic button? Do Maple Leaf fans want you to hit the panic button? No, don't hit it. I'm asking.
No, I'm not going to hit it.
Oh, your finger looks primed to hit the button.
Should I hit the panic button? Should we? See, I hit a different
Psyched
button.
Me out. Psych.
Pull the Ken Jennings on you. Jeopardy. Should we hit the panic button? The Leafs have two regulation wins in their last 15 games.
22 points in 22 games. I'm no mathematician, but that's probably 82 on the season, and that's not enough to make the playoffs.
But in the last 15 games, that's a winning percentage of basically zero. My math's a little off on that,
but I hear you.
It's basically zero on the percentage. Mm-hmm. Tim, you know what? I'm not the one here that jumps to conclusions.
No.
I'm not the one between the two of us and three of us behind the camera. Carson's in for Dagan. Good to see you, Carson. I'm not the one to jump to conclusions.
No.
I'm not the one to panic. Dude, we are in November.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
December hasn't started yet, by my math. Do I hit the panic? Do I hit? On one hand, two regulation wins in 15. On the other hand, they got Mikheyev, which is good, right? He's good.
I thought it was Mikheyev.
Is it Mikheyev or Mikheyev?
No.
Mikheyev?
No.
Mikheyev. Right now, it's not doing much. I'll shut it down. Tim, this is a big call. I pride myself, literally pride myself, on two things. No exercise and giving you a straight answer. Here in this moment, Tim, November 18th, 2019, with the Toronto Maple Leafs on the road for an
I wasn't going to listen to it. I'm just going to hit the button. He's staring at me with his mouth agape. Don't, he's catching flies in that mouth. No, I couldn't sit and wait. You're going to hit the button. Are you not going to hit the button? I'll hit the button. Listen, I'm the patient guy.
If you guys have some Simon and Garfunkel, Hello Darkness, My Old Friend, I'll take it right now.
Listen.
This second, because I'm stunned he did this.
Yeah, just hit the panic button. I'm good with it. I hit it. I'm the guy. You want me to do it again? It's not just one thing wrong with this team. Power play isn't good. Never mind great. 21st in the power play, 25th on the penalty kill, 12th in scoring, 23rd in goals against average. They get pushed around. They can't punish people on the power play right now when they get pushed around. Yeah, there's a problem. Two regulation wins in the last 15 on pace for 82 points. Yes, yes. What are we doing here?
But you didn't ask me if there was a problem. You asked me if you should hit the panic button.
Yeah, well, usually...
That's not a one-problem situation.
No,
that's a multiple-problem situation.
No, we've discussed this before. The panic button is what you hit before the disaster strikes.
Oh, it's preemptive.
Yes.
Really?
You hit the panic button in order to stop the disaster that awaits. That's what the panic button is.
Hold on. You think we have that power here? This is not a test for the emergency broadcast system.
No, it's not. But when we push the panic button, it is to try and get ahead of the looming disaster that is on our hands. I don't know if that was the 18-wheeler backing up in Pittsburgh, but let's be honest here, and don't use the excuses. I understand 6 back-to-back, backup goalie. Pens were also playing the second of a back-to-back without Sidney Crosby, Patrick Hornquist, Chris Letang, and they were playing their backup goaltender. The guy playing his first game ever, Kazimier Kaskisuo, faced 14 shots in the first 12 minutes in his first NHL start. It was 2-0 after one. It was out of reach in the second period. That's the kind of weekend that can get your coach fired. I'm not sure that's what happens, but make no mistake, that kind of performance, Friday they had a chance, they lost to the Bruins. Saturday, the Toronto Maple Leafs laid an absolute egg. And that is the kind of weekend that gets your coach fired.
You thought they were in it Friday?
I thought they had a chance
to win the game. No, the scoreboard says you're right. They were in it
Friday, and I would give a little bit of a pass on Friday if you backed it up with anything on Saturday, but you didn't.
But Friday was the typical Leaf game, too. Like, you saw both sides of the ledger.
Oh, yeah.
You either don't show up against a Pittsburgh team who, Tim, as you mentioned, breaking news, were missing dudes as well.
Mm-hmm.
But then, so you completely no-show on the Saturday. That's Leafs MO number one. Leafs MO number two, the more consistent of the two, is to give up the first goal and kind of hang around as best you can and not pull it out, which I think is a little more the result, which I think is a little more painful for fans, mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
You know what I'm trying to say?
I do
right?
know.
Yeah, talking about a hockey game on Friday
yeah,
night,
you
right?
did not get yeah. the result that you wanted.
No, but it's Leafs fall behind early. Chase. Maybe pull even.
Show flashes. Maybe.
Show yeah. flashes. Chase. Power play. Bad shorthanded chance the other way. Chase. Lose.
Mm-hmm.
So you saw both ways the Leafs can mail it in. On Friday, you got both sides of that. What do you want on the menu? What kind of Leafs loss do you want? Because they were both on display this weekend. Tim, let me ask you something. Can you tell by watching a team the coach has lost a room? Do you think that's possible?
No. I don't think it's possible. I mean, you can see signs. And it's so funny because every day I ask my old man, I go, "Did you ever play on a team where you're trying to get the coach fired?"
Hold on, reset. Your dad played pro hockey for a couple years.
Yeah. And he's just my sounding board oftentimes.
It's a good sounding board.
And I say to him, "Did you ever play on a team where you tried to get the coach fired? Like, you were so sick of what the coach was." And he's like, "That doesn't happen. I don't think that happens. I don't think that you willingly want a guy to get fired so that you can replace him." But I'll be honest with you, sometimes I see visions of that when I watch certain teams. And that Saturday night affair, there was a lot of laying down going on there.
But what's stopping a bunch of kids who have long-term deals from thinking like that? I'm being serious.
No, I know. I just didn't.
But your dad played in an era where, I believe that didn't happen.
I feel like you wanted a different answer, and that's why I'm chuckling.
That's exactly what I wanted, is a different answer.
You wanted a different answer?
Because it is
a different time.
Different time now.
When guys make $10 million a year and they have it long-term, they're more likely to be frivolous over a couple of games.
William Nylander does nothing. I repeat, William Nylander does nothing on the ice that helps you win. But that kid knows full well he's outlasting Mike Babcock. That's a dangerous thing. That's not healthy, especially if things are going south. But there are other things. I'm driving at one specific thing here, Tim.
Okay, go.
When you treat Jason Spezza the way he was treated to start this season, and I'm not just talking about opening night. When they went back to Ottawa early in the year and he sat him there, I don't care how young or old the room is, they noticed that. Jason Spezza has played 1,000 games in this league.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know there's a lot going on with this Leafs team, and we've laid a bunch of it on the table. But don't tell me the way he spat all over Jason Spezza to start the year and was dissing him in training camp wasn't noticed by the guys. And say what you want about the other guys. But I think stuff like that has an impact. And I think stuff like that, collectively, with other issues, injuries and whatnot, have led to the spot that the Leafs are in. That team's not playing for their head coach. They're not. You don't have to play pro hockey to know that. Is it completely Babcock's fault? No, I'm not saying that either. But there are some things that have gone on here that were talking points for a little while that I think had way bigger issues than some of the other aspects of the Leafs, like the power play and injuries and whatnot. I think Babcock may have lost dudes early this year who respect Spezza and what he's done in his career. Spezza's not the greatest hockey player of all time. He'll tell you that. But don't do that to a guy who's played 1,000 games in the National Hockey League and expect zero repercussions on the other side. Yeah. You've got to be very careful with that. And he did it blatantly over several nights in one of the weirdest fourth-line rotation things we've ever seen. And I think there are little things here added to the other bigger issues that have led to this point with the Leafs.
I also think if you're trying to drive home lessons of working hard and making sure that you're doing all the right things, and you sit down the 1,000-game veteran instead of one of the guys in the top two lines, you lose your point. Like, it's all well and good to send your messages with the guy who just joined the team on a hometown discount versus one of the guys who's making upwards of $5 million a year. Now, Babcock earlier today was asked about being on the hot seat. Are you curious what Mike Babcock said about his seat and whether or not it was getting warmer as we speak?
After the practice in Vegas, he was asked about this? I'll take this, yeah.
Here's Mike Babcock from earlier today.
I'm in a pretty good spot in my life. You know, my kids are growing. If my kids were young, I'd never coach in Toronto. Okay, so in my spot, I don't spend a whole lot of time listening, but I do get text messages from people that, you know, are friends of yours, and they're sending you texts, well, they care about you. Well, I'm going to do it as hard as I can, as long as I can, and I've always bet on Mike Babcock. I'll continue to bet on him.
Oh.
Well, he is in Vegas.
Just like Wesley Snipes on a plane.
When you're in Vegas, bet on Babcock.
Right.
Always bet on Babcock when you're in Vegas. You know what I'm saying to me?
No, I know what you're saying.
Cut or uncut, third person referring. Just in life. I don't care who you are. Cut or uncut.
Not a fan.
I'm not a fan either. Sid Sixero hates that. I am not a fan of referring to yourself in the third person.
Let me ask you this. The crazy part of all the angst in Leafland is that it's almost the same thing in Calgary. Don't believe me? Listen to Matthew Tkachuk speaking of Vegas. 6-0 loss to the Golden Knights last night. Here's what Matthew Tkachuk had to say about his team, who have lost 4 in a row.
Oh, it's disgusting. It's bad. It's bad right now. We need to change this around. Maybe going home for one game can do this and spark us going into this road trip. But something's got to change here. We got to get back to the old us and get out of this little funk we have here, because this is not fun. It's not fun right now. So, you know, it's when we're playing our best, it's fun to come to the rink, play with the guys, and this last little stretch we've struggled, and it's not fun being down in games, and it's not fun leaving your goalie out to dry like that, and it seems like we've done that a little bit too much here.
I wonder if before he left Vegas, he bet on Babcock. Oddly enough, the Flames and Leafs similarities don't stop there. A lot of folks in Calgary asking where the pushback was from that team in a 6-0 loss. Who do you think is in more trouble?
Which team is in more trouble?
Yeah, the Leafs or the Flames?
Look, that Calgary team still finished first in the West last year. Part of me does not believe that team has left. The one concern I would have, Timmy, among most of them. I mean, the joy of my Saturday night, honestly, Tim, is to go on Twitter and look for one thing. Which goalie Matthew Tkachuk fought with this weekend? That is becoming an annual rite of my weekend. Who did Matthew Tkachuk... If Johnny Gaudreau has 2 goals in 18 games. Mm-hmm. Sean Monahan, who I'm a fan of, 2 goals this month. I think it was 3 last month.
He got five. They both got five.
And that blue line is laced with experience. Matthew Tkachuk, at 21 years old, to be setting a blowtorch to the dressing room should embarrass every veteran in there. That's the takeaway I have. The losing, it is what it is. I think it'll turn around. But for a 21-year-old kid to be stepping up that way and challenging, and it's not the first time he's done that.
I was going to say that.
That's not the first time. Sorry, Timmy, to step on your point there. If I'm the guys in that room, if I'm the veterans, this is a bleep or get off the pot moment. It can't be the 21-year-old fighting all the time. It can't be the 21-year-old agitating all the time. It can't be the 21-year-old as your leading scorer. It can't be the 21-year-old who sounds like a 30-year-old in front of the cameras. There's too many other guys in that room who are good and have experience. They should be embarrassed that a kid at that age has to mow their lawn for them. That has to stop, or that team isn't going to make the playoffs. That's the main concern. I think they're going to play better. But the attitude in that room has to change. That guy can't be the leader. He's too young. It's ridiculous. But he is. And other guys need to step up. That's what worries me the most.
I feel like Giordano is a man of few words, but he does speak up.
He does. But I haven't heard him talk like that before.
I don't know if he does that every game. And I don't know that if Matthew Tkachuk keeps going to that well, whether or not it'll run dry.
Well, I mean,
I do know that Gaudreau and Monahan have run dry. And Gaudreau had 36 a year ago. Monahan had 34. They're both on pace for 18 right now.
Yikes.
They need to score more goals.
And, John, quite frankly, Johnny Hockey, I'm sorry. I'm on him more. 6.75 mil on the cap per year.
Okay, so the Leafs play what? Like 11 of 13, or they're in the midst of 11 of 13 on the road. They're in Vegas. They got a couple days off.
What could go wrong?
What happens here? Like when this is all said and done, when we turn the calendar year, and let me tell you right now, since December 29th of last year, the Leafs are 29, 27, and 10. That's 29 wins in 67 games, okay? They don't rank inside the top 10 in anything but shots on goal. They rank 22nd in points percentage during that time. That's no longer small sample size stuff.
It isn't.
That's real deal stuff. And if they don't turn it around, I think you might see Mike Babcock gone.
I agree with you.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know where else you go with this. Look, I mean, American Thanksgiving in the hockey world, it's a big deal. You know, where are you? Statistics say where you are usually is where you end up, whether you're in the top 8 or not. And
not everyone's going to pull off the St. Louis, so don't give me that.
Well, you're here. See, it's interesting you bring that up, though. You're hearing that a little bit. Not much, but people are pulling at it. And quite frankly, Tim, I'm with you. It's not believable. That is obviously an aberration. Do not give me the St. Louis Blues ideology. Well, the Blues did it. Yeah, the Blues were Halley's Comet and got lightning in a bottle. Don't tell me you're going to do that with William Nylander on the periphery, not going to a single corner or in front of the net. That's not the Blues. The Blues had a bad goalie situation, and their fourth stringer turned out to be like a Conn Smythe caliber player.
You know he's got 8 goals and 17 points.
William Nylander?
Yeah.
He just doesn't do enough.
Okay.
He doesn't do enough.
Just wanted to throw that out there.
He just doesn't do enough.
He might be the one that they need, that they have value on if they want to make a trade.
Well, that's a
couple tweets coming in here.
That's a different conversation.
Someone whose name I can't read on national television and or radio says, there's a time when Leaf fans aren't panicking?
It's pretty good.
I dare you to make one positive comment on the Leaf situation right now. Hashtag, that's a tough one.
Hold on, I got, whoa.
Hashtag, just talk Raptors.
I got it. I guarantee you the Leafs will not lose tonight. They don't play.
And Raheel writes in and says, time for Montreal to trade for Taylor Hall.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. I'm here for the Taylor Hall to Montreal talk.
There's some Montreal fans going,
yes or no, behind the camera, quick. I got some thumbs up. I don't want to talk about an AAV. I don't want to talk about a price. But
three for three.
Taylor Hall. You're Taylor. All right. Three for Carson, thanks for playing. I have no idea who your favorite team is.
2019 Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremony goes tonight in Toronto. Haley Wickenheiser headlines this year's class. The greatest women's hockey player of all time, entering as a four-time Olympic gold medalist, seven-time world champion, along with three-time Selke Award winner. Habs fans in the room, your captain, Guy Carbonneau, and two-time Stanley Cup winner Sergei Zubov, and Vaclav Nedimansky, who was the first athlete from an Eastern European communist country to defect to North America to play pro hockey.
What a story.
As well as Pens GM Jim Rutherford and Boston College head coach Jerry York, who will all be elected into the 2019 class of the Hockey Hall of Fame.
What a night. What a night for them.
It is one of the great nights in all of hockey.
It's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Time for a break. When we come back, what did Colin Kaepernick achieve over the weekend with a moved workout at a local high school in Atlanta? We'll examine with Robert Klemko next, right here on Tim and Sid. And then Kelly Rudy will weigh in on the Leafs and the Flames and the Habs. This is Tim and Sid, coast to coast on Sportsnet and locally in Southern Ontario on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Still to come, Eric Smith on the Raptors as they take on the Hornets. You can see it right here on Sportsnet. And Sid Sixero, we will talk hockey with Mike Babcock, potentially on the hot seat in Toronto. Things going on in Calgary and what the Montreal Canadiens can do to plug the hole that is Jonathan Drouin, and to a lesser extent, but still an important one, Paul Byron.
Get to all that momentarily. Week 11 in the NFL is basically in the books. There was also an incident in Atlanta over the weekend where a league-sponsored workout with Colin Kaepernick turned into something else about an hour away. I don't know what happened here. We're going to try and find out here. Robert Klemko of Washington Post has been kind enough to give us 7 minutes of his time. Robert, welcome to Tim and Sid. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Very
good. Good. Let's start with Kaepernick. What the hell was this? Because honestly, I don't know what the league got out of it other than bad press, and I'm still trying to debate what Kaepernick got out of it. How would you describe it?
Well, on Tuesday, the NFL asked Colin Kaepernick if he'd be willing to do a workout on Saturday. Now, that's not really tradition in the NFL. Usually free agent workouts are done on Tuesdays. So that was odd. And then they gave him a couple hours to respond. The language in the contract the waiver that they wanted him to sign on Saturday to work out of the conference facility included a waiver claims related directly or indirectly to the workout, which is another oddity. Free agent tryout waivers do not include any. So he didn't sign, and therefore he didn't do it at the Atlanta Falcons facility.
Robert, forgive me. The technology's a little wonky here. We're going to call you back. Is that okay? Forgive me. And,
you know, record which scouts were there and show.
It sounds like we're having problems.
Yeah, we're having problems, guys. We'll call him back. Again, Robert Klemko of the Washington Post has been kind enough. I guarantee you, we'll get his take on Colin Kaepernick. I want to hear it too.
We will not silence him.
No, absolutely not. So, again, this was a situation where the league had set something up for Saturday. The cameras weren't allowed in. Colin Kaepernick at the last second was going to have to sign some form of waiver.
Mm-hmm.
And Kaepernick said, I'm moving an hour away. This workout is not happening here. We're moving an hour away.
Yeah.
The league then deemed it not officially a league workout. And it just turned into a complete disaster.
And Pro Football Talk right now is saying that the standard tryout waiver is much more narrow than the waiver of the NFL. It feels like there's a lot of publicity and PR being spun here, and maybe Robert can help us back out as he's on the phone now instead of the FaceTime. Sorry about the technology Robert, and welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's all good.
We're not trying to silence you.
And what I was saying is that in many ways, as we get further and further away from this and the details start to come out, it feels more and more like a ham-fisted attempt by the NFL to protect themselves from a public criticism saying that they haven't tried to get a team to sign Kaepernick or they haven't given him the opportunity, and also to prevent or to stop him from filing further collusion claims against them and having to shell out more cash to him. And as you guys were just saying, the waiver that he was asked to sign would have waived any claims relating to the workout, right? Indirectly or directly, and that would have prevented him from being able to sue. So he wouldn't sign the waiver. They moved the tryout to another venue, and in some ways it hurt him because there were a lot of fans who saw that who aren't interested in following up on all this other news that has come out later and have said, look, everything with this guy is drama. Well, the NFL, it created this drama entirely out of whole cloth.
Hmm. The one part, and I've read through a lot of this stuff, and 3 years ago I definitely supported Colin Kaepernick and his right to protest, but I don't know what Kaepernick wants right now because he won't tell us. And some folks went as far as to say that he doesn't want to play again and that he just wants to make a statement. Do you agree or disagree with the last part about folks saying this wasn't about football, this was about him attempting to make a statement?
You know, I do disagree with that because I think that he showed that he's in football shape and that he's been working at that for 3 years. There wasn't a scout that went to that and came away with the impression that the guy doesn't want to play,
right,
but he wants to play on his own terms. You know, he wants to continue to protest. And I think he's been very clear about both of those things, that he wants to play and he's going to continue to protest. I think the reason that no team will touch him is not only because of the PR hit and the fact that you're going to have CNN and NBC and Fox News outside your building for the first month that he's there, but he's going to influence other guys in the locker room.
Right.
You saw it when he was in San Francisco, and you saw it when guys that played with him or knew him, like Kenny Stills and Michael Bennett and the McCourty twins, when they protested, other guys on the roster felt emboldened because a leader was protesting to join the protest. So I think what everyone's afraid of in the NFL is that having Kaepernick on a roster is going to create this divide in your locker room that wasn't there before.
Right.
For 3 years, no team has had the courage to take the PR hit. What I don't understand about all of this is what makes anyone think that team currently exists. I know there have been inquiries. I know teams won't talk to the league about maybe setting this up so they wouldn't take the PR hit. But at the end of the day, someone's going to step out on the stage if they're going to sign him. The league can't completely cover them. Do you think, Robert, that team exists?
I don't. And I think it's the classic balance in the NFL and really in all pro sports of the expected return and the expected PR hit. You know, a team is willing to have Tyreek Hill or Kareem Hunt on a roster, regardless of you know, all of the crimes that they've been accused and convicted of against women, because those guys are contributors, and their talent level and what they can contribute outweighs whatever criticism you're going to get from the outside. It also makes a difference that he's a quarterback. Because if he ends up starting, that's a leadership position on a roster. That's a leadership position on a community. You can bury Kareem Hunt in the corner of your locker room, and everyone's going to forget about him eventually. And I'm talking about the running back for the Cleveland Browns, yep, who was on tape striking a woman. Because he's a running back. But when the guy who is potentially leading your franchise is creating a division in a locker room, and there will be division wherever he goes based on his protest, then you need that talent to be that much greater.
So if the prevailing narrative from the weekend is kind of both sides are to blame, and I'm not saying it's the right narrative, I just feel like it's the prevailing one, did Kaepernick help or hinder himself with what happened over the weekend?
You know, I think our politics and our cultural discussion on this topic and so many other topics right now in the States is so polarized that anybody that was Team Kaepernick who went into last week Team Kaepernick came out Team Kaepernick. And anybody that felt that, you know, he was wrong or that he's unpatriotic or, you know, has other motivations beyond playing, then this week's news could have confirmed that for you. You know, I think the sides only get further and further apart on this.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to sum it up. And the one thing that I hope, and maybe he did a little bit, is someone can sit down with Colin Kaepernick and have a frank discussion, because in, you know, the last little while, what we've figured out is sometimes a conversation can help too.
Yeah, absolutely. But
I think so.
It's going to take that team, though.
You know, what's tough for a lot of these teams is that it has been 3 years. I've always felt like his best chance to get back on a team was immediately after his last NFL game. And the chances just go down with every day that passes.
Robert, the again, apologies for the technical difficulties. Yes. You are way too good for those technical difficulties. So please, let's set up a date in the future where we can do this again clean. And congratulations on the move to the post. And thanks for this again.
I would love to. Thank you, guys.
All right, there's Robert Klemko, formerly SI, now, as Sid mentioned, the Washington Post, day one, I believe, today.
Yeah, that's a fairly high-profile publication, the Washington Post.
I've heard.
We're going to take a break. High-profile controversy right now in Toronto. High-profile controversy right now in Calgary. A couple of Canadian cities right now are hot with controversy and panic. That discussion next. Tim and Sid, TV Radio.
Tim and Sid. Time for Tim and Sid.
It's time for real sports talk with Tim McCallum and Sid Sexero.
Thank you very much, Sheepdogs, back here on Tim and Sid for another 30 minutes on Sportsnet, full hour on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan in the Toronto area. Coming up, 6:30 Eastern, it's Hockey Central, Jeff Merrick and Colby Armstrong, followed by Raptors pregame show at 7 Eastern ahead of the Hornets and the Toronto Raptors from Scotiabank Arena. Eric Smith will have the call on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Tonight, he'll join us later on this hour. And then again, Sydney, in case you still need more.
I need more hoops in my life.
10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific, Thunder Clippers. By the way, Kawhi Leonard listed as questionable after missing the last two games with a knee contusion.
Well, hopefully he's okay.
Got it good, and since you understood. Well, two games, though.
Yeah, it's not your normal load management evening that would piss off ESPN.
I don't think so.
No, this is something a little different.
I don't think so.
We'll double back on that in a bit. Let's begin this hour with hockey. In the lineup, brought to you by Harvey's. Harvey's makes your hamburger a beautiful thing. Tough weekend for the Leafs, who lost back-to-back games to the Bruins and Penguins, extending their season-worst losing streak to 5 games without a win. Mm-hmm. Leafs will play their second game of their 6-game roadie tomorrow night against the Golden Knights. They were on the ice in Vegas for practice earlier today. Trevor Moore not at that practice. In fact, he was placed on IR because of the bad shoulder that he suffered in Friday's game. And Pierre Engvall was recalled from the Marlies as a result. As the losses pile up, Tim, so does the pressure on Mike Babcock. He was asked about people questioning his job security in Toronto earlier today. This is how he responded.
I'm in a pretty good spot in my life. You know, my kids are growing. If my kids were young, I'd never coach in Toronto. Okay? So in my spot, I don't spend a whole lot of time listening, but I do get text messages from people that, you know, are friends of yours, and they're sending you texts, well, they care about you. Well, I'm going to do it as hard as I can, as long as I can, and I've always bet on Mike Babcock. I'll continue to bet on him.
And he has cashed out on being Mike Babcock as well.
Yes, he has.
There is a plane, a private plane. So he's already brought the chips to the cashier and said, give him my cash.
Yeah.
So that bet has paid off rather handsomely to Mike Babcock from his days at McGill.
Didn't keep playing with the house money. Cashed out.
Oh, yeah.
Went home.
Right.
$50 million over 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this, Tim. And if you want to pass, I'll take that as an answer. What I'm seeing a little now in terms of reactions from Leaf fans and people who aren't Leaf fans at this losing streak in this stretch, who were never really the biggest Mike Babcock fans, are immediately going to this argument. Yeah, well, when he doesn't have Duncan Keith, Shea Weber, Carey Price, and Nick Lidstrom, he's not that tough of a guy, is he? Is that unfair for Mike Babcock?
Do you know what I think is going on here? I'm going to go even a step further. Here's what's going on. Leaf fans are pissed, and they have no idea where to direct that aggression, that frustration, and they're not going to get Kyle Dubas fired, and they may be able to get one or two guys traded. So all you're seeing is, where do we put that aggression? And you're right. Some of them who already had the preconceived notion that Mike Babcock wasn't the guy to lead these is now using this as fodder to lead the fire Mike Babcock charge. But the idea is simply this. People don't know where to place their frustration.
Right.
And Mike Babcock's a guy who you said just made $50 million, who is supposed to be the guy that leads you to the promised land, who got you cute in that first year when you took the Washington Capitals, the President's Trophy winners that year, to six games. But you haven't seen that next step. You've seen similar systems. So I understand why people are pissed off at Mike Babcock, but let's be honest, it's just a frustration being pointed, as it is in every situation like this across the sporting landscape. What do you do to shake up the team? Usually a fire the coach.
The fact that Kyle Dubas, now he did speak last week, to be fair to Kyle. He spoke to the media a week ago, less than a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
This, to me, is always the type of moment.
I wasn't being unfair to Kyle, was I?
No, you weren't.
Okay.
I agree with you. But this is the type of moment, to me, that needs someone to say, he's our coach. And Kyle kind of said that last week. But to lose in the manner in which they lost Friday and Saturday night,
mm-hmm.
and now they're on the road, and you got Mike willingly taking the questions he took today. I was actually kind of surprised. Because normally a guy in his position who has a gold medal and ring would say, I'm the coach of the Leafs. Next question. I'm here to win. Next question. He entertained the pressure of it.
Right.
It was an interesting comment. I want to move away from the bet on Babcock thing because that's the headline.
Is that also easier to do when you've been paid most of your $50 million?
That's the super button for you.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Having $50 million in full would make me feel better about my situation.
Right.
Having already won a Stanley Cup would make me feel better about my situation. Having won an Olympic gold medal would make me feel better about my situation.
And that's why he was, all those reasons are why he was hired in Toronto. But now people are looking for results. And let's be honest here, they're looking for results from everybody, including Tyson Barry,
correct,
including Kyle Dubas, including everybody on that roster, William Nylander, Austin Matthews, whoever laces up the skates. The people who are fanatics of this team just want some answers, and they want some results.
Tim, I have a quote from Kyle Dubas from training camp.
Mm-hmm.
And Kyle was asked, does Mike Babcock, and we all remember Mike Babcock was not given immediate support once the season was over. Kyle Dubas said he had to think about it, like everything else in the organization, and was eventually named the Leafs head coach for the coming year. So in training camp, Kyle Dubas was posed with this question. How many wins does Mike Babcock need to have?
Mm-hmm.
Where does this team need to be in the standings for you to be comfortable with the decision to bring him back? This is what Kyle Dubas said before the year. Quote, I don't look at it that the team has to win X amount of games. Mike's proven himself elite a long time. What we'll be watching for at the beginning of the season and at the end is how the team is playing. That team quit Saturday night. My words, not Tim's. I want to make that clear. That team looked like it quit Saturday night. And it's been radio silence from Shanahan on this.
They were embarrassed, I'll say that.
They were embarrassed. Yep. Absolutely. I'm really surprised today, either from Brendan or from Kyle, there's not a pat on the back publicly. And the silence there is deafening to me.
It's
really interesting that didn't happen.
I think this road trip will be near make or break for Mike Babcock. Bad news for the Habs today, as it was announced that both Jonathan Drouin and Paul Byron will undergo surgery. Now, both players were injured in Friday's win over the Capitals. Drouin suffered a wrist injury. Byron hurt his knee. Now, they said it wasn't on the Ovechkin hit for Drouin, that it was in the third period. Both listed out indefinitely. Both are expected to miss a couple of weeks.
When's a wrist? Withdrawing, and they'll find out more how much damage there is. I don't have all the medical details with Paulie. They're going to go in there and obviously look at his knee and it needs, when I say surgery, what kind of surgery, not sure, but that's what I mean. Yeah. We hope that by the next day or two with both surgeries, we'll be able to give you guys a timeline, but right now before surgery, it's just a matter of waiting to see what comes out of it.
So they're obviously looking at Paul Byron's knee.
Absolutely. Not a great day injury-wise. I think we can all agree on that. We don't have to be some hardcore hockey expert to say that losing a guy like Drouin for minimum 8 weeks is probably not a good thing for your hockey team. He's been playing way better hockey.
So I heard 6 to 8 weeks. Now we're going 8 weeks on the Drouin?
Alan Walsh said 8 weeks on online. But six to eight is the normal.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't mean to just focus on the 8 weeks.
No, I want to
focus on the most negative part of it. You know me. So I want to focus on the eight weeks.
Right.
But
I just thought I missed something.
No. You didn't, Timmy.
I know that Julianne said minimum 6 weeks.
Right.
Yeah.
Not a good day.
No.
But I still think this is manageable for the Habs. I still think they can keep their heads above water. The way that blue line is playing, Carey Price hasn't even played his best hockey this year. Like there's some really good positive things I still like about this team. They took a hit, but I don't think this sinks them. I think they can keep their heads above water till Drouin comes back. I think they're a way better hockey team than they were last year. This isn't a good moment, but I don't think this sinks the Habs.
Just for me, this is a tough break for both the player and the team and Jonathan Drouin, because it seemed like he was turning the corner on his Habs career.
He was.
And he went through a lot since being traded for Sergachev, including being compared to Sergachev, being asked to play center. And it looked like he had kind of, along with the team, turned the corner. Second in the Atlantic. And this is a tough break, player and team, for sure.
Absolutely. So, and couple that with the Flames situation right now, having lost four in a row, and Matthew Tkachuk calling everyone out after the 6-0 loss.
Don't
forget
the Canucks situation.
And the Canucks situation. There's a lot of situations. Anthony Stewart can talk about situations of Hockey Central at noon. He is joining us on the line. Stewie, what's going on, man? This is an interesting time here.
I know. Thanks for having me on. I'm just on my way right now to Westwood Arena. Tonight is coaching night for me, and so I got my coaching cap on, but I come on for you guys for a bit.
Westwood, the fake Chesswood.
When you,
I'm old school, Anthony.
Stewie, when you go to hockey arenas, do you get mobbed like McAuliffe? Like, how does that work? McAuliffe can't even walk in anymore.
I do not get mobbed.
That's a lie. Do you get mobbed like McAuliffe?
I don't. I do not. I've been around the rinks now for 5 years, so they get excited to see my brother, but not me for some reason.
favorite barn growing up was blank. Can you fill in your favorite? You are now frequenting these same arenas as a minor hockey coach in the Toronto area. What was your favorite barn growing up?
It has to be, and it's due because they had the best beef patties in the league, was Scarborough Arena Gardens. So huge. I would go there, play huge. A game against the Scarborough Young Bruins, and then have about four beef patties. And they are about, I think they were about 75 cents back then when I played. So I'm a patty monster, so Scarborough Arena Gardens, best patties in the league.
Yeah, solid pregame meal. Shout out Birchmount and Variety Village. And what's the stadium behind Scarborough Gardens that I'm forgetting right now that we used to play football at?
Birchmount Stadium.
Oh, my God. My Scarborough is lacking right now.
Stewie, out of curiosity, what would happen if you ate the fifth patty?
I don't think I'd make it to Scarborough. I'd have to go to the bathroom.
That's tough.
Yeah.
Speaking of making it, is Mike Babcock going to make it to December if they don't play some better hockey here? And I'm not saying it's his fault. I'm saying, what else could Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan do?
Well, I think they need a change, but I think it's too early now to fire the coach, because right now, if you look at it from Dubas' perspective, he has to now start looking at self-preservation. Because if you fire the coach now, the microscope is going to shift to Dubas for this year and next year. So I think if they do it in the offseason, it buys them some more time. But they need to make a change, because obviously what's going on right now is not working. They're not buying in. They're not responding. They quit on their backup goalie coming up from the minors in his first NHL game. So something has to change. So for me, if I'm Dubas, I got to look at making a move. I got to make a move. I know they have lots of cap constraints right now, but they have to find a way to make a move. But firing Babcock, I think they made that decision based on the summer. Hey, you know what? We're going to give him one more year, see how he does in the first round. Does he get out of the first round? Does he make it to the conference finals? We're going to make a move based on that. I think they're going to stick to the plan. So say what you want about Dubas. He's very calculated. He's precision in the moves that he makes. And I don't think he's just going to make a gut-wrench decision based on a stretch of, I want to say 5-10 games, but for me, 20 games.
I mean, my only point here, though, is you gave out so much money to your quote-unquote important core this soon. Missing the playoffs is not an option. Like, I'm just saying, like, you're so far up against the cap to bring one guy in. There was talk of having to drop three prior to Marner getting hurt.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, you have to look at changing your coach, because I don't know what the repercussions would be for people in that organization if you said to the board, I'm going to give all these kids the money and you miss the postseason. I don't know what their reaction would be to that.
Yeah, but what you need to understand is, you know, Sheldon keeps a rookie coach. Do you really want to throw him into the fire mid-season with a team underperforming?
Right.
Yeah. So I think the plan is to bring him in once the players are, they have another bunch of playoff series under the belt. They're another year more mature. If you bring him into this fire, he probably might even decline, saying, hey, I don't want to do this. This is too much to handle right now. But I think right now with this team, They're the Globetrotters. They're very entertaining. You know, they're playing against the Washington Bullets every other night. They're putting up a lot of goals and, you know, a lot of points. But what happens when you put the Globetrotters against the 2005 or mid-2000 San Antonio Spurs? They get killed. Right. So I think we're in a bit of this hockey bubble where we think this team is amazing, but they have major holes when you play against teams like Pittsburgh, who has players that their top players are out. They have surrounding pieces and depth that can do the job. So I think with the Leafs, they're not built. They're built for speed. They're built to put up a lot of points. But we're talking Stanley Cup contender. They're not there yet.
Let me ask you this, because I hear it a lot when I'm in arenas in and around the Toronto area, that there is, you know, you give the kids this kind of money and you're asking for trouble. Is there a lack of accountability? I mean, you used the word quit on Saturday night, and I find, like, at the professional level, that is such a tough thing to say. But is there more accountability needed, and how do you get that on a professional franchise where you've got a lot of young players making a lot of money?
Yeah, there has to be a little bit more accountability. You know, Florida gave me an $800,000 signing bonus, and I went crazy. I spent it all, but you have to learn to be a pro. And what people don't understand is these guys are in their third, fourth, fifth years here, and they're the main focus of this team. They're the star players. But being a national hockey player, it's not just putting on your gear and going out there and performing. You got to have proper nutrition. You got to be in the gym. You got to know how to act on road trips. So what they don't understand is, hey, just because they're putting on their gear, they're going to be top players, that's not the case. It takes time. It takes 5, 6, 7 years. We look at all these other teams that won cups in the past. You know, we're talking about Ovechkin and Crosby. You know, they went through the doldrums for a while before they became regular NHL hockey stars.
I've said it seems like the Leafs have had the same deficiencies, at least defensively, for a couple years. And they're getting worse when you look at some of the numbers. And some of the business have reached out to me and suggested to me that they are playing similar systems that they've played in each of the past years. They've replaced some of those assistant coaches. Have you seen some of the same systems being played? And is it just getting used to each other when you add two to your top four defensemen?
I just think they don't complement each other very well at all. And on a night-to-night basis, I'm seeing CeCe and then O'Reilly not being on the same page. Barry's not really reading too well off of Muzzin. But I think their solution now is, well, let's just put Justin Hall up there and see what he can do. That's not a viable solution long-term. They need these top players, these top eight players, to be top players, but that cohesion isn't there. And there's too many lapses. There's too many first-period goals. There's too many goals being scored at the I talked about this morning. How many goals have been scored when there's a 19 on the clock? If you did the math on that, you'd go crazy. There's too many lapses, defensive lapses. The structure's not there. So I'm not letting Babcock off the hook, but that's something you got to pay attention to, that defensive structure. And we know they're a high-flying team, but this is the National Hockey League we're talking about. You've got to pay attention to those details. You have to.
Stewie, how awkward is it to be in an NHL room and you know the guy at the head of the room talking might not be there in a week? Like, how awkward is that? How difficult is that to push through and just go about your business?
It is very awkward. And I've been in a situation where we had a coach that was losing his mind every single week. And one night he just lost it. And everyone started laughing. They're like, you're really snapping again? Like, how are you still snapping? How do you have that much snap in your whole entire being? So guys just sort of look around the room, and I think that's what's happening now. I'm not pretending I'm in the know, but when a coach is preaching certain things and it's not being implemented and the players aren't responding, that's when you know something's going awry. So I could see that right now by that performance. I thought they were going to come out and put on a better performance, especially for a rookie goaltender coming in, but it's just not there. So they're not buying in, but you can't make a move at this point of the season. I believe you got to make a trade. You got to bench somebody. When's the last time someone's been benched? We heard about Nylander sitting two shifts. Someone needs to go eat some popcorn and a hot dog in the stands for a game to really send a message to this group. But for now, it's status quo. They're still getting their paychecks every 2 weeks. Nothing's really changing, so I think they're just going to keep playing the same way.
Yeah, and it can't be Spezza. It's got to be one of those guys that makes the money,
He's
right?
played that game. Yeah.
Who scored last game, by the way?
Yeah.
Who's now your third-line center?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, underrated Weston fries. I'll throw that in there. But next time I'm at Scarborough Gardens, I'm going to see if they still got the beef patties because they changed it all around. Remember, they used to have the wall there. Now it's just glass. It's all changed there.
Get it at All Sport too when you, while you're there. Also.
All right, thanks, buddy. Appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, guys.
All right, there is Anthony Stewart on his way to Westwood Arena for a game tonight.
Now you got me thinking about all the things I used to eat at arenas, and none of them were good. Chews. I was addicted to chews.
Remember chews?
And chews were like 5 cents.
They were like tiny little gums. They were a little sour, right? Oh, those were the ones you're talking about.
But then
about?
Put like 9 in your mouth at the same time.
Yeah.
And it was and that flavor would last for at least 10 seconds.
10 seconds, yeah.
At least 10 seconds. Yeah. And then you know what you do? Another 5 cents. You go in there, man, I used to burn a trail between the stands and the chews.
I think they were called dipsticks. It was literally just sugar.
With the powder.
It was
powder. Different types of sugar.
Powder, and you just dip the stick in there, and then you pulled it out. Fun dip is what people are yelling at me in my ear. Fun dip.
I love what people yell at us during the show and what they don't yell at us during the show. That's funny to me. that was good. In a good arena
hot dog. How many goals did Gaudreau score last year?
Sheldon will find it. A bad arena hot dog.
Fun dip.
A bad arena... A bad arena hot dog is never bad. It's always good. I'll take a bad arena hot dog any day of the week.
As long as you've steamed the bun enough, I'm with you.
Really? With the steaming of the bun, really?
Oh, yeah. It makes it soft, soggy, yeah.
What about au naturel?
This guy.
No?
He doesn't know anything, Sebastian.
Oh, my God. Everyone in the room is looking at me with this huge look of disapproval.
They're from Montreal. They know what I'm talking about.
All right. Well, the Habs won't recover from the Drouin injury. There. I said it.
What?
We're going to take a break. The Raptors are back at home tonight. They're going to take on Charlotte. We'll tee that up for you. I'll complain about Canadian soccer.
You ever buttered your buns?
That's a personal question.
No, you butter them, then you put them on the fry, whatever.
Well, there was a one night in Muskoka. And...
This is Tim and Sid on Sportsnet, 590 The Fan in Toronto, coast to coast on Sportsnet, at least for a couple more minutes. Charlo, our friend, sent in a quick picture of Fun Dip on Twitter showing the old grape and cherry sugar flour. I don't even know what you want to call it. I think just sugar, probably.
I'm pretty sure it was 100% sugar.
And a stick that you could dip in the sugar.
Which was made of sugar.
Right. And Bill Freeney wrote in and said they cut the Fun Dip down to one pack. And one stick.
Are you kidding me?
Now, it's always been one stick. Sebastian, I agree with you. It's always been one stick. And you would have to preserve that stick to make sure that you could dip it into both.
Wait a second.
You think there were two sticks in the original Fun Dip?
Two sticks for sharing. We know this? It was one stick.
I don't think
Producer Jason Sands telling
Again,
me in my ear.
People quick in our ear.
That's a pretty big piece of information, though.
Because
I remember two sticks.
I got something. Well... It's from Facebook. I don't want to quantify
Facebook
what you just said.
Facebook never lies about anything.
Right.
So just one stick.
It was a lick of sticks is actually what it says.
I don't even want to comment on that.
Two Fun Dip flavors.
I don't like the name of it.
With a candy lick of sticks.
That makes me uncomfortable.
Dip it. Taste it. Wow. Hey, man,
somebody in a meeting pitched that, and they're like, let's do it.
I'm reading the package. That's all I'm doing.
That is awful.
Two Fun Dip candy flavors and a candy lick-a-sticks.
Hey, guys.
Taste it. Wow.
Could you come up with a creepier line? Hey, guys, we're in a Fun Dip. Welcome to the Fun Dip meeting. We need a line. Who's got an idea?
Right.
Hey, Rick, how about this one? Lick the stick. Fun Dip. That one didn't make it.
No.
You know what wasn't fun? Canada Soccer Friday night. Oh my holy God. So they go to Orlando. I'm talking this up again for like a week and a half, more, month. For a month, I'm talking about Canada soccer. They go to Orlando Friday night. They lose 4-1, give up a goal in the third minute. So now Canada, to get to the World Cup in 2022, have to take a very long road, Tim. I'm talking long. There's like nearly 40 teams involved in this qualifying.
There is no way to get back into the hex.
There is a way, but they got to beat a lot of teams. Now, they're one of the better teams in that huge qualifier. But it's way more complicated now than it could have been if Canada just got a draw. John Herdman's record as coach of Canada's men's soccer program is now 10-3. Did you know that?
10-3?
10-3.
Mm-hmm.
All three losses are playing Alphonso Davies as a defender. Each and every one of them.
Can I ask you a question?
Mexico, Haiti in the Gold Cup, and that on Friday night.
Why would you play him as a left back?
He plays left back at Bayern Munich. It's a big team. Bayern Munich have more depth than Canadian soccer. I now think there's enough evidence to suggest it's a mistake to play Alphonso Davies as a defender for Canadian soccer, playing with Jonathan David up front. They mess defenders up. They can't deal with them. I'm really disappointed. Breaking news, Canadian soccer.
Why can't Canadian soccer have nice things? At least on the men's side. Time to say goodbye to those of you watching on Sportsnet. Up next, Hockey Central, Jeff Merrick and Colby Armstrong. That'll be followed by our coverage of the Hornets and the Raptors. Later tonight, Clippers host the Thunder. If you want more of us, we continue on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan in Toronto. So we continue there, Sid Cicero. And as we were looking at the Hornets and the Raptors, anything else that you'd like to say about Canadian soccer before we move on to basketball conversations?
I'm pissed.
I know you're
like,
right.
I'm pissed. Don't play the guy in defense. We need him up. And yes, I'm saying we. I understand what I'm saying. Three times you've done this. Haiti, Mexico, Friday. Stop it. He's the most electric Canadian soccer talent I have ever seen. Play him up. Why don't you play him in net? Just play him in net. Why not? Why not, Pop? Just play him in net. Honestly, this is insanity. Herdman wins every game where he's not a defender. And Friday, when it mattered, nope. Got to play him at left back. Do we have better left backs than him? Probably not.
Right.
But that's not the point.
But we might not have better anythings than him. Except for Milan Borjan.
Shut up, Milan Borjan. What a rough night.
Yeah.
But I'm a Milan Borjan fan. Anyway, I needed to get that out. I've been holding that since Friday. For the love of God. One day, I want something good to happen consistently to the men's program. One day.
The men's basketball and soccer program almost fight each other for who can break our hearts more.
It's like they have a meeting. They go, how can we stomp on the soul of our fan base worse?
Boy, yeah.
And they have a pool. Mm-hmm. And it's a bet between them, and then they all win.
And then Canada soccer goes to Honduras, and something happens in Honduras, and Canada basketball goes. Well, I don't know how we top that. And then they go to China with nobody. They just take a bunch of guys who play U Sports and then professionally in Europe, and they go, hey, these guys are going to be able to do it for us. And then they show you some light, and you see, oh, my God, all these guys are really good. Until they have to play the best teams across because we can't get any other draw but to draw two teams in, what, the top 10 national or in the world? Yep. And then that goes to crap, and Canada soccer goes,
they just keep giving each other the wiser's clap.
That's basically what's going on here.
So a message to Canada basketball and to Canada soccer. And we're going to look in the camera here, and hopefully everyone's listening. We can stay on this one if you want, please. To Canada basketball and Canada soccer, stop toying with our emotions like this.
Quit playing games with our hearts.
You're playing games with our hearts. You're going to lose to the States. You don't get a good draw in FIBA. Please stop it. We love you. Love us back, please.
Olympic qualifying, Victoria.
We're going.
June.
We're going. All the players are going to show up for Canada, right?
We're going to work on it.
We are going to work on it.
We're going to work on the fans getting there.
Yep.
We're going to work on the players getting there. And maybe once, we won't have our heart broken by Canadian soccer or Canadian basketball, or we could just watch the women who ran tings over the weekend in Edmonton, got it done, and have won bronze in the Olympics on the soccer side of things.
Mm. Shout out to our Canadian women. Again, some of them flying 26 hours from Australia for a tournament they didn't have to go to. Canada was probably going to win anyway. But they did it. Why? Because they love their country and they showed up. Good on you.
Maybe our next guest can help us out with attempting to get, one, the fans to Victoria, and two, the players to Victoria as Canada basketball tries to turn their corner.
You don't have to twist my arm to go to Victoria. I love Victoria.
You're looking at me sarcastically.
No, I'm looking at you with a longing look in my face. A look of agreement, McAuliffe. Right. Look of agreement.
Eric Smith, who is the radio voice of the Toronto Raptors and also works a bunch of TV, does a bunch of things for us. We appreciate him. Joins us now. Eric, is there any way that you can promise to get fans and players to Victoria for Olympic qualifying?
If you guys are going, I think that would probably go a long way in me convincing the players, let alone fans. Because if they know that you guys are going to be there, then we know it's a party and folks are going to want to come.
All right.
So if you're in, I'm in.
I like the end of that.
So sorry.
I know the horse bleep start of it was kind of just patting us on the back, but the second part I'm taking.
And Tim, I don't know, maybe it's my earpiece. Eric said he'd pay for all of us.
What?
Shout out Eric Smith. Shout out Eric Smith.
That's that rap, yes. That championship money.
There you go.
You bring the fun dip. I'll bring the cash, and we'll all have a good
don't
time.
Don't threaten me. I'll hide that in the suitcase.
I'll bring my liquor sticks.
I'm gonna try and transition off that as best
quickly,
I can,
please.
All right. So Eric, tonight, Hornets and Raptors. Whenever a team comes back from a road trip, especially a long one like this, you don't know what you're gonna get. Kind of like some fun dip. You never know what you're gonna get when you open up a pack of it. What type of Raptors do we anticipate this evening coming off that, dare I say, rather successful, given the context, 5-game roadie?
Yeah, I would agree with you, Sid. Rather successful when you think 3-2. I would have taken 3-2, even with a healthy roster, even with Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka and OG Anunoby playing in all five of those games. So I still think it was a good one overall, but you're right. That first game back after a road trip, I can tell you that the team landed at about 3 o'clock in the morning Eastern yesterday, early Sunday morning. No practice yesterday, but no shoot-around today either. So, you know, I'm sure it was a lot of rest yesterday on Sunday, just trying to, you know, recoup and get themselves back on track, back in the Eastern time zone in preparation for this one. I think that said, with due respect to the Hornets, they won a couple of big ball games lately coming down to the buzzer in their last two. They're 6-7. They're better out of the gate than a lot of people expected. But you know what? If I'm coming back after a 5-game road trip, I think I'd rather be seeing the Hornets than the Celtics or the Sixers or some of the world beaters in the Western Conference. So this might be an opportunity for Toronto against a team that I still think they should be able to take care of, even with the tired legs, et cetera. This is a game that I think Toronto still has to get and should be fully prepared to get this one tonight.
Rest and tired legs, I heard you mention. Is there any worry with Pascal Siakam doing all this, the 26 points per game, the 37 minutes a game? He's doing all this for the first time, and I thought that he struggled a little bit in Dallas, and that might have had something to do with it. Is there worry that there might be a little bit too much being asked of him because of all the injuries that have transpired on this team?
Yeah, I think it's a good point, Tim, and I would agree. You know, Saturday night, it probably was, you know, if we were kind of trying to pick out what has been his worst showing of the year, it was likely on Saturday against the Mavericks, and that might have been some fatigue. I mean, the Raptors didn't play, prior to Saturday for a couple of nights, so they had a couple of days off. You thought maybe you'd be a little bit rested going into that game, but it could just be the wear and tear, because as much as maybe these are just the sports cliches we like to throw, it's always tough to come home that first one after a road trip. It's always tough to close a road trip, to play solid and to still have the juice and the energy for that last one, and I thought that might have kind of bit the Raptors and bit Pascal specifically on Saturday night, just sort of running out of juice. But when you talk about the minutes that he's logging right now, you know, he and Van Vliet amongst the top 5-10 in the league right now in terms of minutes played. And I think that is a concern for the Raptors. If you're a fan right now and you're worried about the long term, you've still got 65-plus games to go in this season. You don't want too much wear and tear on those guys early in the year. The issue, though, is I'm not sure there are a lot of other options at this point with Lowry still sidelined for at least another week, with Ibaka sidelined, you know, indefinitely. And now on top of that, even for a game like tonight, Stanley Johnson, who hasn't played a whole ton, he's out and he's not going to play with a groin injury. So the list in terms of injured players or unavailable players is almost getting longer than those that are available. And it's, I guess, up to Nick Nurse now to press those right buttons and say, who do I ultimately trust and who can I go with? We saw Rondae Hollis-Jefferson suddenly creep into the lineup, and thankfully he was arguably their best defensive player in this road trip. But now, is there somebody else that Nurse is going to be able to tap on the shoulder and say, I need 5, I need 15, and will that person be able to, you know, be able to step up and perform?
Eric Smith joining us here on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590, the Fan. Hornets and Raptors on air tonight. When all the injuries started to pile up, the one thing a lot of people kind of put on the table was, yeah, it's a bad spot. However, we're going to find something out about the bench here pretty soon. Mm. And all the minutes that were being given to starters by Coach Nurse early on, we didn't really know what the bench was. What did we learn about the bench over these last 5 games, do you think?
Well, I'll tell you what I think I learned is Rondae Hollis-Jefferson clearly can play. We all thought he could play when the Raptors went out and signed him in the offseason. And for whatever reason, Nick Nurse didn't like what he was seeing in training camp and through the first couple of games of preseason, and that crept over into the regular season. And Nurse, and I'm paraphrasing here, at the beginning of the trip when Ibaka and Lowry first got hurt, he said in not so many words, I pretty much have to play guys now because I don't have a choice. So these guys better be ready. Now, to his credit, Hollis Jefferson stepped up and he proved himself. We learned, I think, that Chris Boucher can play regular minutes, even that, you know, a bit of a smaller size in terms of his thinner frame. I think we learned that what we thought we saw early in the year, the first, you know, three, four, five games, is Terrence Davis can play. He's a guy that's I think, and it was proven in the two games in L.A. and definitely in the one game against the Lakers in the victory, he is not shying away from the moment. He is not scared in crunch time. He's taking shots. He's making plays. He's not backing down from the biggest of all in LeBron James or anybody else. That confidence can't be taught. And I also think we learned that Matt Thomas can do more than just shoot. He's never going to be a fantastic playmaker. You're not going to throw him out there at the point. He's not going to necessarily be a lockdown defender, but he can keep his man in front of him. He can keep his man in front of him to the point where he can stay on the floor and not be a liability defensively. And if he can stay on the floor, then that means more offense, more opportunities to duck in and out of those screens, to free himself for those open shots. And I think we're starting to see opposing defenses already, guys, less than 15 games into the year, recognize and realizing, hey, this guy's on the floor because he's a marksman, he's a shooter. And he's now helping space the floor for the Raptors when he's out there, creating more opportunities and opening up the floor for a Van Vliet, for a Siakam, and others. So I think we've learned quite a bit about those three or four guys, and we're starting to see the chemistry develop with those three or four guys I mentioned as well, already now starting to, you know, get that chatter about, is this sort of bench mob 2.0 for the Raptors, where you actually have a three or four man system that can come off the second unit and actually provide a lift to your starters.
We're running out of time here, but I tried to tell the story of Chris Boucher on the show and his time at Saint-Hubert, where he was washing dishes at one point out of school. I know you did the story, and we'll tweet it out so that people can see it if they want to. But what was your biggest takeaway from kind of chronicling the Montreal native's journey to where he is now in the NBA?
You know, I don't want to sound cliche about it, Timmy, but just the hard work, the determination, the sticking to it. The fact that basketball, it saved his life, but it also kicked his life a couple of times. Just when he thought things were finally taken off, you know, in his life, and he moves from St. Lucia to Canada, and then as he grows up in kind of an impoverished area, things are kind of starting to pick up as he finds basketball. Then he has a bit of a falling out with his mother, but he finds his way back to basketball, finds his life back on track again. Then all of a sudden he has the ACL with Oregon. He finds his way back though onto the floor, ends up getting signed by the Golden State Warriors, and now with the Toronto Raptors. It's like every time he seems to have been kicked down, he himself has found a way to get back, but basketball has helped bring him back as well. So it's kind of a feel-good story, both on and off the floor. And, you know, it is a cheap plug, but I hope people check it out, not just for the sake that I did the story, but just so that they can hear his story, because he is a real special person, I think, let alone player.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you who the worst member of the media is to travel with on a five-gamer. I was just trying to end with this ridiculous question.
I can give you that.
Oh, okay. Well, just because the Boucher story is such a great story.
I almost wanted
to end it there, but if you'll take my ridiculous question, I appreciate it.
Well, it may not be that he's the worst, because he's very generous, and of course he is award-winning now, but for the first 5 minutes of this segment, right behind the camera that I'm talking to, of course, is Matt Devlin, who was doing this and this and a whole bunch of things, trying to throw me off my game a little bit. So I love the guy.
Didn't work.
But, you know, if I had to pick one, he'd probably be the one, because, of course, he was standing, like, right here as the segment was about to start, too. And he's like, Tim and Sid? I said, yeah, are you going to video bomb me again? Is this your thing? So I'm going to go with Devlin.
Right.
Award out the door. It's Devlin.
What was Devlin doing, like a Jersey Shore impression behind the camera? Like, what was he doing?
It's pretty much it.
It's, you know, T-shirt, he
tries to be cool with doing this.
It's trying to get him to dance time. E, thanks, man.
Here
welcome
comes.
Home.
Oh, no.
That ain't right. Whatever is being said, that ain't right.
See? You know what I was thinking? The guy who needs more airtime is Matt Devlin.
He's my man.
Matt Devlin needs more airtime. That's what I was thinking. E, thanks, brother. Great stuff.
All right, guys.
Right there is Eric Smith. Tonight, Hornets versus Raptors.
Devlin's like addicted to any on-air camera. Addicted.
Yeah, I don't know anyone like that.
I think he's talking about me.
All right.
I think McAuliffe's talking about me.
I had one more question for E, but we've run out of time. We've got to get to what we missed. So I'm going to ask you the same question I was going to ask him as the start of what we missed.
What we missed!
Does Fred VanVleet get enough love for what he's doing so far this year?
Fred VanVleet's one of those guys that you're going to really fully appreciate. And don't get me wrong, the appreciation is in full bloom. I was there opening night with Freddie Chance raining down on him getting a ring.
But I'm telling you,
the love
like
is real.
18 points per game, 7.6 assists
that's
per game. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about right now.
I think what he does at times is underappreciated, honestly. And I think he's not being completely appreciated for what he's doing.
Our owner, Ash Madani, tells us 400 Canadians made the trip to Madrid as the Davis Cup got underway today. You could see it on the Sportsnet family of channels. A couple of big wins. Vasek Pospisil gets one. Then Shapovalov gets the other. Both, what, like top 15 players in the world. Canada would lose the doubles match, but finish the day 2-1 and now control their own destiny against the USA tomorrow. You and I were watching this. This was wonderful tennis.
Yeah, and it's just, look, and I don't want to offend anyone in this building who is knee-deep in the Davis Cup, but I'm going to be honest with you. I've had a hard time following this. Now, when Canada's been on Sportsnet,
switching format, too.
No, but this format change where they do this all in 1 week, all in one city, six groups of three, and it ends Sunday, this I can get into. Like, I was watching Rash and Falsey and everyone all day with you.
Okay.
I'm in on this Davis Cup format change because something had to happen. Over, like, 18 months, you sometimes lose my attention, right? Yeah. If you get this done in a week and tell me there's a winner on Sunday, I'm in. So, A, shout out to the format. Shout out to the Canadians doing well. Shout out to the loud Canadians cheering them on in Madrid. It was a good day. It was fun. I like it.
Coverage begins tomorrow at noon Eastern on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet Now. We spoke earlier about Lamar Jackson's case for being this year's NFL MVP. What we didn't talk about was the best endorsement ever, or just what you need from your friend. If your friend doesn't introduce you the way Mark Ingram introduces Lamar Jackson, find more friends.
The MVP front runner. If anybody else got to say something different about that, then come see me. I'm right here in B-More outside the bank. If you got an issue with that, come see me. I'm about that. Big trust. Woo woo. Lamar Jackson in the flesh. Yes, sir.
Big trust.
I'm with you.
Well, why wouldn't he be with him?
At the next Rogers function.
We introduce each other that way?
I want that.
Okay.
Either we fly in Mark Ingram, mm-hmm. one of my favorite players in the National Football League.
Right.
And one of the funniest dudes in the National Football League.
Uh-huh.
Or if you do that to me, or if I do that to you, just keep repeating big trust. Whoop, whoop. Is that what it was? Can I hear it again? I need to hear it again. I want to get it right. Just let me know when it's cued, guys.
The MVP front runner. If anybody else got to say something different about that, then come see me.
Yeah.
I'm right here in B-More outside the bank. If you got an issue with that, come see me. Whoopie. I'm about that.
Whoopie.
Big trust. Woo woo, Lamar Jackson
woo-woo.
In the flesh.
More of a woo woo. There's a big trust.
I'm with you.
And a woo woo.
I love Lamar Jackson at the end with the "I'm with you," which is code for okay, funny. My time now at the podium.
I like this T-shirt better, and I wrote it down somewhere, but it's something like "No one cares, work harder."
Is that what it said?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Nobody cares.
That's amazing.
Work harder. You know who's putting in work right now? Chuba Hubbard.
Let's go.
Oklahoma State running back out of Sherwood Park, Alberta. I think we can now call it Heisman watch continues. A lot of people were suggesting that he couldn't win the Heisman because of where his team was. They're now 22nd in the nation, according to the last AP poll. He ran for 122 yards, two touchdowns against Kansas. They took him out because it was an easy win, 31-13. Has Hubbard officially entered the Heisman Trophy debate? And remember, there was a significant injury over the weekend that we're going to talk about in a second.
Yeah, the Tua injury is looming large. The numbers themselves just are phenomenal. Listen, for Chuba Hubbard, a Canadian, to be on top of Jonathan Taylor of Wisconsin. Jonathan Taylor, in the first two or three weeks of this college football season down in the States, looked like he was literally going to run away with the Heisman Trophy. He was having five touchdown games. Jonathan Taylor for Wisconsin was going to be the guy. A Canadian kid is one-upping what he's doing. No one saw that prior to the year. Chuba Hubbard has to be in that Heisman conversation. And I mean, Tua injury aside, to be beating Jonathan Taylor to me is a stunning, stunning achievement for any running back in Division I A college football this year, let alone a Canadian. And he has to be in that Heisman conversation. He has to.
It feels like it was best quarterback, top five team for a long time. And now I think a lot of people are starting to lobby away from that. And I think we're seeing the same thing in the NFL MVP conversation with Christian McCaffrey and what he's been able to do. Now the Panthers have fallen off a little bit and he'll probably go away from it. But I'm with you. I think he is now in the mix. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him in the Downtown Athletic Club at the end of the year.
Just to be in the room, though.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Like,
top
for
three.
Chuba and this and the family, that would be unreal. I'm hoping for that. Hoping for it.
Let's get on to Tua and his injury. We heard something about the right hip. He had successful surgery. Now, for those who don't know, this was the presumptive number one pick overall in the draft, quarterback Alabama. Now, they're saying, according to Alabama, his prognosis excellent. But I want to play you a clip from Nick Saban, and I want you to tell me whether or not this is the type of emotion that you'd like to hear from your head coach when your starting quarterback, who was coming back from an injury, suffers a devastating one with the idea that most people believe he will go number one overall in next year's NFL draft. Here's Nick Saban.
Look, you know, the way I looked at this whole thing is Tua's our number one quarterback. If he's physically able to play, we wanted to play him in the game. That's what he wanted to do, and that's what our team wanted to do. If I would know, knowing that anything bad was going to happen, I certainly wouldn't have put him in that situation. But, you know, we're a team, and we're a team that's trying to get better in the long term, in the long run, to see, you know, if we can finish the season the way we want. And, you know, I hate it that the guy got hurt.
Human beings don't exist in that sport. Like, am I, is that over the top or is that accurate?
I don't know what I wanted from Nick Saban.
I wanted more than that.
But I wanted more than that. And you're right. It, like, the next, like, he was doing next man up with a kid who was going to go first overall
in a
NFL
game.
Draft.
He was up 35-7. 35-7. They were up.
It was still early when he got hurt, relatively early.
Third quarter.
Yeah.
But 35-7. Gary Danielson of CBS saw him practice before the LSU game. He said on Sirius, he's not 100%. This kid's been out there for weeks hurt. So don't let the act that you just heard fool you. Nick Saban doesn't give a damn about anyone until they can't help him anymore. And I don't know what I wanted either. Listen, Nick Saban's, I don't want Pete Carroll from Nick Saban. I'm not going to get it.
Right.
I'm not going to get the emotional coach. But Division 1A coaches, NBA and basketball, or excuse me, football and basketball, they don't live a human life like the rest of us. There is one thing that matters. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Kid can bust his leg for Louisville at a Final Four, at Elite Eight. You move on and you try and get the win. Emotions are out of it. And again, Tim, I'm with you. I don't know what I wanted exactly. That felt completely flat to me, considering you're the one that had him out there in like a 35-7 game in the third quarter. It was odd to hear. Yet reaffirming at the same time of what I think about human beings like that.
Since we're talking college football, would you like to make a prediction on this year's edition of the Vanier Cup now that we know that the Montreal Carabins will take on the Calgary Dinos in Quebec City on Saturday?
I like how the Dinos looked at home against McMaster.
Yeah.
And a shout out to Acadia, who played Danny Machocha's team pretty tough on Saturday afternoon. I like the effort they put in. I don't think the score was reflective, but Montreal did what they had to do at the end. Give me the Dinos in Quebec City this Saturday. I like Calgary to kind of wrap it up.
If they get over the hump in Quebec City, it would be fitting for them how many times they lost to Laval in a big game. So they've done a great job in keeping that program where it is. So it would be fitting if they were able to do that. All right, we're done. That's it for us. Coming up next, it is Raptors. Hornets.
Let's go.
Sept on 360. We're done for the day. Talk to you again tomorrow.